Your mic on? Oh, you're talking about my mic. Okay, we have in front of us, we can't move it yet, but House File 260, Representative Lesch. And go ahead and begin, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a homecoming of sorts. This is the first year that I have not been on this committee in 13 years, Mr. Chair.
We miss you.
Thank you. I miss it.
For yourself.
You guys look so happy.
I miss you,
Lesch. See, Maren O'Neill misses me.
Oh.
Thank you, Maren. So, Ms. Chair, House File 260 is the Uniform Deployed Parents Custody and Visitation Act. There are three things I want to get across to you clearly. First of all, we've already been through civil law, and we've been through Veterans Affairs, and we're here. I would note that Mr. Lake from the Bar Association told me he heard back from the courts this morning, and the courts have returned a fiscal note of zero on this. I'm not sure if it's the same information that the committee has, but that's the information I have. This bill is a working product of a group of attorneys from Military and Veterans Affairs section and the Family Law section of the Minnesota Bar Association. They both worked very hard on this bill. So aside from one being a uniform act, which makes it a little less controversial, and then also having being run through the meat grinder, the Bar Association working groups, which is a good thing, this bill in and of itself does multiple things to ensure that military parents are not penalized for their service while giving adequate consideration to the interests of the other parent in a dissolution, and most importantly, the best interests of the children in a dissolution. So Minnesota is the only state with no laws concerning custody matters for deployed service members. Current state law does not adequately address issues raised by deployments, including the fact that you can get deployed suddenly. We need to make sure that in overseas deployments, issues affecting parent-child bonds are not adversely affected. And also on situations where a service member is returning from a deployment. So the procedures this bill sets out are to apply, to change the law to ensure that mutual agreements to provide custody arrangements during deployments are considered. Provides an expedited procedures for entry of provisional custody orders, allows the court, at the request of the deploying parent, when it serves the child's best interest, to grant a service member's portion of custodial responsibility to an adult non-parent, so a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle, provides a no permanent custody order can be entered before or during a deployment, and guards against courts using a deployment or possible future deployments as the sole factor in determining service custody. And I would note we added an amendment in Veterans Affairs, the Schur amendment, and Mr. Chair, this is Staff Sergeant Samuel Schur, serves in my battalion and in your form of battalion, 2 of the 135, who went through this during the Iraq deployment of 2011 and 12. Right? It was 11 and 12. And had to deal with a situation with this child where essentially he was not afforded the opportunity during that entire year. You come back and your kid's a year older, and especially when they're that young, I mean, what do you say to a child who's had her or his daddy gone for that long, or mother, which happens, of course, in many of these situations as well. So we had an amendment for virtual visitation because they've got Skype over there and other computers, saying that parenting time can be supplemented when a deployed parent is gone by visiting with their child using technology. It can be phone, it can be Skype. And so that's why we added the Schur amendment. So with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Staff Sergeant Samuel Schur.
Okay, just before we do that, we'll have to make a break in cadence and do a mark step for just a second here. That's a term that we just... And we'll have our L.A. do the roll call.
Representative Cornish.
Here.
Representative Johnson. Representative Constein. Representative Dean.
Here.
Representative Hertas.
Here.
Representative Hillstrom.
Here.
Representative Howe. Representative Lohmer.
Here.
Representative Lucero. Representative Neuberger.
Ready, sir.
Representative O'Neill.
Here.
Representative Quam. Representative Rosenthal.
Here.
Representative Schoen. Representative Ward.
Here.
Representative Winkler. And Representative Zerwas.
Okay, having a quorum, we'll bring the meeting to order. And Representative Hertaus, you want to move the minutes?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And having reviewed the minutes, I will move the minutes.
Okay, Representative Hertaus moves the minutes of February 24th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, sir, go ahead with your testimony. State your name and title.
He'll call him sir. He works for a living, Mr. Chair.
I'll let him say that. My name is Samuel Shear, and I work in the same battalion as Representative Lesh. We served briefly in the same company for several months. I had no idea that he was actually a representative at the time, and it got brought to my attention when we started on our second deployment, and I was facing the same issues that I had on my first deployment, where my ex-wife completely excluded me from the time being with my daughter while I was serving overseas. So with the frustration that I had, being that I approached her several months in advance that, you know, I would be leaving and I'd like to have my parenting time stay in place or have, you know, a minimal amount of time that my family could spend with our daughter so that I in turn could then see her over the webcam and through Skype or just any mode whatsoever, that met with a hesitation right away from her end. And any contact with my family was immediately stopped from the moment I started training when I was less than 150 miles away from home. So I put an idea together. I did a lot of looking online and seeing what other states have that they have in place. And there was a good number of states out on the East Coast that started a virtual visitation amendment in their laws for child visitation for family members, not necessarily military, but for family members that work an extensive period of time away from their kids or have to work out of state a lot, that they can still see their children and view them through webcams, emails, text messages, scheduled phone calls, and stuff like that. So I started a petition online. I started a group to follow it and gain more attendance and notoriety to it. It was called Operation Virtual Visitation. I started seeking help from other people higher up in my chain of command. They turned me into Representative Lesh for the idea of this, and we started working on this almost 4 years ago. And it's something that I've just been fighting for, something that I hold dear. I came from a family where my parents divorced at a young age, and they used us as their tickets. And I don't want any of that to happen for my children. I want to be involved in my children's life as possible. So one of the things that I strive for is to always let my children know that I will never give up on anything, and I will, especially when it comes to being able to see them. So my first deployment, I went an entire year of not seeing my daughter except for a 12-hour period over 3 days when I was home on leave. I left when she was 10 months old, and I came back home, and she was nearly turning two. The last time in 2011-2012 was the same situation where I left. There was very minimal contact. I only was able to see her through a webcam on two separate accounts where my ex-wife allowed my family to see our daughter. And outside of that, I can't say that she actually did allow any other time other than those two times and the time that I was home on leave when I got to see her a few more. So when I came home, I started working more with Representative Lesh on trying to see what it is we could do. He introduced it several years ago, and it didn't work out quite well then. And so when he contacted me last month and said, hey, you know, we've got this passed on the civil law. Would you like to come and testify in front of our Veteran Affairs Committee? I agreed to it right away. And then that was just last week. And then later in the week, he said that we've got another opportunity to sit in front of the Public Safety Committee. Would you like to come and testify again? I said, by all means. So that's why I'm here today, because I'd like to really gain your guys' support and approval for something like this, for parents who are in the same situation who really want nothing more than to be able to have that connection with their children all year round, no matter what the circumstances may be, but aren't necessarily afforded it because the court system doesn't really allow that.
Okay, thank you, sir, for your testimony. Before any questions, I neglected to move House File 260 for consideration. It'd be recommended to pass and move to the general register. Questions, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lesh, for bringing this forward. I didn't spot it initially and trying to review the bill, but in the circumstance in which a service person is deployed, is there a provision in here that some of that custodial time can even be spent with the grandparents of that child, even if they're not, you know, directly have custodial rights? I mean, to really keep that nexus and that connection of the paternal parent in the loop, because I think it's generally assumed that when you share custodial rights that the parent will be able to include mom and dad or the grandparents, and I think that's a real strong bond or connection, and just would wonder if you would comment on that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus, there is, but in order to get into the details of that, I'd ask for a response. Colonel Joe Clyburn is here, who was one of the working group members that worked so hard on this with the members of the Bar Association committees. They can speak more specifically to that, but the short answer is yes.
Good. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. I think we need to do everything we can to assist the military personnel and assist with their families, because the families is really what support our men as they and women as they do their service to our country. I do like this bill, but I've just wanted to make sure that you've been working. We have a number of other bills going through the House dealing with family issues. I know Representative Scott and Representative Mahoney have bills in here after you do today. I believe there's a couple other offers, and it's the group that's been working a number of years dealing with this. I'm just wondering if you've worked to them or talked with them to make sure that any of the changes that they have in their bills don't conflict, or nothing in this bill conflicts with that or would get lost because of the changes being done in those bills.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, yes. Now, there in the multitude of the family law bills that Representative Scott and Representative Mahoney and others have coming through here, there's some provisions that would potentially conflict depending on if they got passed or not, especially with respect to changing standards and messages to the child. But I think those can be relatively easily dealt with by the reviser when it occurs. So yes, everyone's on the same page, and I'm not off on my own here. And Representative Scott actually floated this bill over to me, and we had a conversation about it before session, so that's why I have it. It was originally hers.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that we don't create some conflicts.
Representative Lohmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lesh and Mr. Scher, for bringing this bill forward. I think it's a great bill, and thank you both for your service. I really applaud you and admire you for seeing a need here and doing the research like you talked about. And I guess I'm just curious, you said several states have done this. Do you know how many?
Ms. Chair, Representative Lohmer, 49.
49.
Yeah,
we're the only one that has not done this yet?
That's for the last chair, Representative Lohmer, that's correct.
Oh, thank you.
Any other questions? Did you want somebody else to testify?
Yes, if I could, Colonel Joe Clyburn is here. She worked on it pretty heavily this chair.
Sounds good. It doesn't sound like a controversial bill, so go ahead.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen, although I am a colonel, a brigade commander in the Minnesota National Guard, I am not here in that capacity. I'm here as a family law attorney. Representative Lesh is correct. There basically are 11 other states that have adopted the UDPPCA. There are other ones that have similar protections or are looking to adopt it as well. Right now, there is really no guidance or leeway for a judge to look at the circumstances of each military family and the best interest of the child to determine how to proceed. You shouldn't have to choose to serve your country only to lose your children as a result. I have personally seen judges' hands tied trying to find a way to do what is right for the child. During deployment, we know that the stability of a child is critical, and it's a factor that helps them handle the stress that comes from having a deployed parent. Having deployed myself as a parent, I understand this. If a parent's relationship is tumultuous with each other, And if we are dealing with the courts at this time, it often is a conflicting relationship. The child and the deployed parent may have little or no contact with each other during that time. This bill would authorize and allow custody agreements to be honored. It would allow courts to consider whether the best interest of the child is to bring or maintain some stability. It allows for an expedited hearing process that allows the court to determine if it's in the child's best interest for someone who has significant and substantial contacts with the child, such as a step parent or a step siblings or a grandparent, if that service member petitions the court to have derivative time with that child. It only gives derivative rights to the extent that that service member has those rights. I've seen firsthand where I had a service member deploy who had custody of their child. There was a step parent who was severely involved. The ex-spouse had significant mental health issues, had moved from 4 homes in the last year. Several of those had been abusive, had very little contact with the child. The service member's stepmother in this case was very involved, did the parent-teacher conferences, did the after-school activities, did the shopping for dresses with the child for the upcoming school dances. Service member gets deployed, and there is no contact anymore with that stability because the mother came forward and said, I do not want that contact. I have all the rights. The court really struggled in that case. When I was on the recruiting side for the National Guard, we had a brigade-wide retention event, and it's a big deal to be able to talk to the brigade commander. And we had a soldier who, by all means, was super. There's no reason this individual should have ever left our formation. And it didn't make sense because he was walking away from a huge reenlistment bonus. So I'm sitting down with the service member. I'm like, explain to me, why are you leaving us? I don't understand. You're on the track for promotion. You're walking away from a huge sum amount of money. And at that time, he told me that he had full custody of his 4 children because his ex-spouse had some issues. They had a week-on, week-off custody arrangement. He had remarried. They were close to their stepmother. They were close to the step-siblings. But when he deployed, not only did he lose all contact with their children, when he returned, he did not return to a week-on, week-off parenting arrangement, but rather he was relegated to every other weekend at that point for someone who had been severely involved in their children's lives. This is the perfect time to enact this legislation. As you know, we have the 34th Combined Arms Battalion that is, the Aviation Battalion, who is deployed right now. We had a recent notice for the division who has now been stood down. It's the time that we act in Minnesota. We've not had any legislation at this time, and it has been worked on thoroughly with the Military and Veterans Law Committee for the Minnesota State Bar Association, along with a year-long endorsement and working with family law attorneys across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions at present? Is there anybody from the audience that wants to testify on this bill? And we're sending this bill to the General Register because it has no fiscal note. It came back zero. Any questions from members before we act on the bill? Representative Lesh, any closing comments?
Please vote yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Okay. Having no questions, the Chair will move House File 260 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, we're going to switch order and bring up Representative Scott with House File 465. Representative Scott, I searched and I couldn't find anything that would make any of my bills germane to yours, so I'm out of luck. I can't add any amendments. Representative Scott, I'll move your bill, House File 465, to be recommended to pass and move to the General Register also. So would you like to begin? Do you have any testifiers with you today?
Yes, I will have. Ms. Melinda Hogdahl from Legal Aid is here, so she will probably be taking the chair here soon. So.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, thank you for hearing this bill, Mr. Chair. Some of you are new and don't know, but in 2012, I carried House File 322, which was a bill that would have established a presumption for equal shared parenting. This bill passed the House. was altered significantly in the Senate, but was pocket vetoed by the governor after legislative adjournment. The governor contacted me by phone to explain that he was vetoing the bill and wanted all stakeholders to come to the table. I shared my skepticism with him, as we had attempted to bring the stakeholders in before and ask for their input. This had resulted mostly with the sound of crickets. The governor assured me that I would have the support of his staff in urging the stakeholders to participate, so I'd like to thank the governor for his part in urging folks on all sides of the issue to come to the table. So over the last couple of, about 2.5 years, we've worked in a custody dialogue group that has brought all the stakeholders together, and it's been a lot of painstaking hard work, but we feel like that we have come up with a great package of bills that will help move family law into this next century here. No one has gotten 100% of what we wanted. What we do have, as I said, are a package of bills that we have reached consensus on, and I believe will improve both the process of family law in courts and lead the lives of children and families in Minnesota. And as an example, today I'll be sitting again with Melinda Hugdahl, who was on the opposite side of this issue back in 2012. Our custody dialogue groups divided into small groups this past year. I was part of the small group tasked with addressing the decades-old best interest factors. In our small group, we had a child psychologist, a family court referee, custody evaluators, a representative from legal aid, and a judge. All small group work products were presented to the large group, where additional input was taken and changes were made to improve the work. A common thread in many stories regarding people's frustration with family court was that the best interest factors seemed to cause a competition between the parents, with the better parent getting the prize of primary physical custody and the recipient of child support, a winner-take-all scenario. Our goal was to revise this part of law so that it was truly child-focused, where both parents are valued for their role in their child's life, realizing the child relies on each parent in differing ways. We also sought to change the focus of the factors from being based primarily on the past to a more prospective focus. It is a fact that the future for a child and his or her parents changes when they go from one household to two. Rather than basing parenting time and custody on what has been, and this should be considered to an extent, it is essential to look at what lies ahead. I believe we have accomplished much, and these changes do consider the child first while also recognizing the value of each parent. We have strong language in regard to domestic violence, placing the child's safety as a top priority. I want to also point out it is important to remember that these factors must be looked at as a whole with care not to isolate any one given factor. And with that, I would invite Ms. Melinda Hugdahl to the table, and I don't know if she has a few words, probably so, and then if you have questions on the bill, we can address those.
Ma'am, state your name and title and begin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Melinda Hugdahl from Legal Aid. As Representative Scott mentioned, we came into this process a couple of years ago. We had a different viewpoint than Representative Scott on her prior bills, and not just Representative Scott, there were other people as well. So we really tried to look at issues that we could come together on and reach some consensus on. And from our perspective to the best interest factors, we wanted to make sure that people, whether they're going through the process on their own or with an attorney, really understood what the courts were looking for, what evaluators were looking for. They were things that were more specific and more specifically related to how things impacted the child. So people could understand much better how courts got from point A to point B when they were putting forward orders with findings about the best interest factors. So we really talked a lot about how to make them usable for families, for courts, for evaluators, and that was a big piece within our subgroup, was really trying to make them much more functional for families too. So looking at things in a very practical way, but really looking at them with the focus of how they impact the child. So you'll see a lot of that language in here of how different pieces impact the child. So that's really, I think, the gist of what I would add, but I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Any question from the members? Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Representative Scott or Ms. Hugdahl, either way. We're changing a lot of words. And when you have a statute that has been in place for some time, and you've had courts interpreting the words in that statute for a long time. There's a pretty well-settled body of law and case law and practice in the court system related to those factors. And the question I have is whether we're just throwing all of that up in the air by rewording everything, particularly in the Minnesota judicial system, in which we have a Supreme Court which is very much focused on strict interpretation of the language. So that's the first question. Are we just sort of throwing this wide open rather than correcting some errors that some people have some concerns about?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler. Our custody dialogue group isn't completely finished with our work yet. The next phase is what we're calling the cultural change phase, and that will be an organized group of people that with the intent of educating the courts on the changes. And so if I could offer that up as any kind of comfort to you, there will be an effort to get in front of judges and the people within the family court system to educate people. Also, I would add that we have the support of the family law section of the bar. Ms. Jennifer Sommerfeld is here today if you have any questions for her, but she is one of the officers in that group, and I know that she will do a lot also to educate the folks that she comes in contact with. But we do plan to reach out. We have also already had a meeting with the Supreme Court, the head justice of the Supreme Court, and several of her colleagues, just to let them know that this was going on, so that they would expect to see some changes, not to get their favor or whatever, just as a courtesy to let them know what was going on.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Hugdahl, in lines 4.7 to 4.9, the language says the court must consider and evaluate all relevant factors, and that is replacing language on lines 3.8 and 3.9 that said the best interest of the child is defined to include. The new language is much more prescriptive on the courts and what they must evaluate, and there is often a separation of powers issue when the legislature tries to tell the court exactly how to conduct its review. We make the law, obviously, but how the court goes about interpreting the law and evaluating what we've written is not something they typically want us to be involved in. Do you have any concerns about separation of powers issues based on that changed language?
Go ahead, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I don't. The previous language, I'm looking at lines 3.8 and 3.9, talks about all relevant factors to be considered and evaluated by the court. So we are inserting the word that they must consider. The case law over time has been pretty heavy on considering the best interest factors, and if there aren't appropriate findings to support the court's conclusion, some of those cases have been reversed. So I think, practically speaking, that's what the court is doing in these cases by having factors. So I don't think that that's going to cause a separation of powers. Certainly, if we were concerned that it would, we wouldn't have signed off on the bill. But I think simply because of the functionality of having all these factors, and there tends to be discussion of those factors in the family court orders, that's happening now. And we put in some language last year about the court being required to make findings on all of the factors. That was put into the statute in a subsequent paragraph. I apologize, I'm looking for that at the moment.
Representative Winkler, any follow-up?
Mr. Chair, I was waiting for Ms. Hugdahl to point out that language.
Is it 5.7?
5.7 to 5.9, and I think that may be a restatement of current law. Subdivision 2, some pieces of what was Subdivision 2 were moved into Subdivision 1, because we removed, currently under the law, there are separate factors for joint custody that are in Subdivision 2. We combined them into one set of factors so they're more understandable. So we took some of those hanging paragraphs and kind of reincorporated them.
Okay.
So I think that that's one that's existing law. I can check on that and get back to you, but I think that it is.
Mr. Chair, one final question to Representative Scott.
Uh-huh.
I think it might be, depending on the answer. This strikes me as a fairly significant rewrite of best interest law, and I'm not sure that I know that I am not comfortable that we know the implications of all these changes and how they'll be applied in the court system. So the question I have is, what problem are we trying to solve by making these changes? I hear your process and the consensus, and I know that there's a lot of controversy around this, but what I'm not clear about is what we're trying to achieve or what problem we're trying to solve by doing this. I assume it's the courts tend to think that the mothers are the ones who should get more time and the fathers don't get as much time, but I don't know if that's true or what the issue is.
Representative Scott, or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Winkler, thank you for the question. There were a multitude of reasons that we did what we did and issues that we were trying to solve. Again, in my earlier comments, I mentioned that the best interest factors have been around for decades. For instance, one of the factors was to take into consideration who the primary caretaker of the child was. Well, our society has changed a lot since these were written, and with both parents now most commonly working outside of the home, it's kind of up for grabs in many cases who the primary caretaker was. We felt that was just one of many examples in the best interest factors that was not keeping up with what was going on culturally right now. And it did weigh, usually, towards the mother in that case. So what we really tried to do, again, was make these child-focused. We didn't believe that some of the factors necessarily, the old factors were necessarily child-focused. And we also wanted to bring attention to the courts that both parents should be valued for their contribution in their child's life. Of course, making the exception for domestic violence. And so that was really the focus of our group, and what we tried to accomplish was to redirect the court in focusing on the child first and the involvement of both parents and the benefits to the child of that in their lives if possible.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, I'm not sure I'm going to support the bill today. I'm just not sure that rewriting this section of law so significantly is narrowly targeted at the goal of trying to balance parenting needs, particularly since the courts, it's the culture of the judges and the probably the presumptions of the judges about how to handle cases like this that are going to be more relevant in how they evaluate these factors anyway. I'm not sure changing the law is going to have that big of an impact, and I'm just concerned about I'm concerned that we don't know how all this new language will be interpreted and used, and I'm not sure that I'm convinced that this is the best way to go about doing it.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say we had stakeholders from a lot of different areas of family law that deal with this, and we have consensus that we do think this is going to make positive change in the lives of families and children. And so, I mean, obviously your vote is up to you. We'd love to have your support. We do think that there are going to be positive changes in the lives of families across Minnesota. And I don't know, I'm guessing that most of you around the table have gotten, been contacted by constituents that have had what they consider unfair treatment through the family court system. We had judges, you know, we had a judge and a court referee in our group, and they recognize too that there's a problem, so and felt that these would be really good changes. So probably nothing I can say to convince you, but just wanted to add that.
Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Scott. I know you've put a lot of work into this over the last few years. My first question is on 4.10. It was the word spiritual in the old language as well too. Is that something? We don't tend to, I don't remember a lot of language in it, and if spiritual means is related to religion, and we're putting that into statute, that I'm concerned if that's a separation issue.
Oh.
Or if that's normal. If it's normal, it's normal.
Mr. Chair, what am I
specified? Amen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Schoen. If you look at line 2.6, which is the previous version of the statute, the previous factor talked about continuing educating and raising the child in the child's culture, religion, or creed.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Chair, and one more. If I could, this is the most prevalent example, and so I don't want to create or talk about hypotheticals, but can you help walk me through this process as far as in this example? What I've been contacted about is a custody situation, non-married couple, have a child, and one parent wants nothing to do with the child until the other parent files for child support. So then all of a sudden, that other parent wants 50-50 custody and has more hugs and time in the world for the child for the first time in 2 years. So walk me through the process on how this is going to help that situation.
Ms. Huckrell.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Schoen. In those cases, which we did talk quite a bit about unmarried parents as well, and in fact the first section of the bill makes these two statutes consistent, so we have the same standard for married and unmarried parent cases, which has really been functionally what's been going on for quite some time. But in those cases, if you look at these factors as a whole, there are several places in here where if a parent has not been involved, part of the discussion is looking at their history and involvement prior to, and that's specifically one of the factors of what's each parent been doing and what's each parent's relationship to the child. And so if the court looks at that and says there's no relationship, then the second part is looking at realistically what's the willingness and ability, and we put those words in there separately for a reason. So there may be people who say they have willingness, maybe they don't have an ability to do a certain schedule because of just realities of life. There may be people who just the court, based on the evidence they receive, believes they're not really willing to do the schedule that they are putting forward, whatever that schedule is. So what we really wanted to do, and from our perspective as an organization that was not in support of a presumption in the past, was making sure that we had very workable individual factors that courts could use in varieties of families, because families are so different and the circumstances are so variable, that we could let parents who wanted to be part of their kids' lives and had a role in their kids' lives really put those feet forward and have the court evaluating that in what's the best arrangement for the child. And those parents who haven't but wanted to, that could be looked at, as opposed to parents who haven't and really there may not be a lot of evidence that they want to be involved. So we really tried to do it in a way that it gives the court flexibility to really work with these families and think about from a variety of factors. And that's why we've emphasized so much looking at the factors as a whole, so that all of these different factors really make sense for the child. And we added some factors too, for example, special medical, mental health, or educational needs of children, which has never been in the statute specifically before, because that is a factor functionally that really is child-focused. And so we really wanted to drill these really into if both parents have had a relationship or haven't as much, but now the court sees that they are willing and able to do that, how to help make that happen in a way that's much more understandable to them than it has been under the old factors.
Representative Schoen?
Mr. Chair, thank you. This is the only example that seems to really rise up, and it's almost to, and I don't know if there's some, and I realize there is so much subjectivity to this and what happens, because if they have an unwritten agreement where, hey, can she come spend the weekend with me? And that's really how it works out, and never has any financial input, and then we'll go a month. Or just take the child out for dinner on a Tuesday night, but not push for 50-50 right off the get-go or offer to pay. I almost wish there was a bit of a timeline on there that says if you don't petition for 50-50 custody within X amount of time, then sorry, you don't get it, and you're going to end up paying child support. But I don't know if that's something that you've probably discussed too, and if you could explain this to me, that'd be great.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not a presumption of 50-50.
No. That I understand. What I'm talking about is I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Scott. And I realize it's not a presumption of any time. It's going to be it's about establishing what that is. But the difficulty is when you have zero interest, I shouldn't say zero, when you have paltry interest from one parent, and then the minute somebody looks for financial support, they have all the interest in the world. And so what I'm curious about is, would there be a way to make that more prescriptive, to say, hey, you know, if you can't figure this out by the time your child is one, except for, you know, medical circumstances or whatever it may be that you've included in this legislation for that parent as well, to have a reasonable excuse to say, yeah, this is why I couldn't. Schedules, whatever it may be, but work, get involved or do that. I mean, when I got divorced, I mean, I was the first and foremost focus of my life was going to be my kids. And even if I hadn't been married, they still would be. So it's hard for me as a parent to swallow that someone will not show up for 2 years or just occasionally, and then until someone says, now I want money. So, okay, well, I want to take my kid all the time then.
Ms. Ogle.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schoen, I think that is certainly a scenario. We did actually talk about it in the first phase of this project before we actually put the nuts and bolts of the bill together. There was a participant in the project who works directly with low-income fathers and engaging them. And we talked a lot about how in some of these cases it's actually having both parents see and build some trust on the fact that if a parent wants to do that, that they're really going to do it. And the other piece was having the parent who's been doing the primary care in those cases, or almost the exclusive care, recognize that what they've been doing has value too. And so that's kind of part of the mix here, where we talked about the history of caregiving. But the other piece is really too with factor seven, which is the ongoing willingness, ability to provide ongoing care and to maintain consistency and follow through with parenting time. So this is giving, and that's a new piece, that's giving the courts some ability to say, if I'm just not really thinking this person's following through, or if it's a modification that they haven't been following through, then it gives that piece. I think the part that gets hard, I understand your point about the what about after a year. We see so many of these cases in different configurations where maybe a child is significantly older, and maybe the person didn't know that they were the father, the parents had split for some period of time, and those fact patterns happen. So rather than try and focus it too much on kind of the parents and what right of actions they bring, we really were trying to keep it into the realm of how that impacts the child. And if it's an arrangement where a parent has involved and has no interest, I think the factors help courts see that much more clearly.
Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry to push this particular piece, because like I said, this is the one that I hear about the most, and I appreciate the legislation. I really do. It is this particular piece that is troublesome to me, because I'm not even talking about a low-income parent. I'm talking about someone that makes $100,000 a year and, like I said, just chooses not to. And all of a sudden, this is used as they know that, say, whether it's the mother or the father has been taking care of that child for 2 years now, 90% of the time. And as soon as the one parent who has wanted to avoid problems with the other because of whatever it may be asks for support because it's expensive, then that's when they bring the attorneys in and start filing lawsuits or asking for custody that they never asked for before. And so it's just trying to manipulate the other party, and I realize that this is probably very hard to dial down and fix that problem, and I think that you're working towards helping so many others that it's really good, but this is the one that I hear about the most. And I haven't really answered my question. I'm not sure you can. So I'm going to give you credit there, because it's a difficult spot. So, all right, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Yeah, I have another testifier here that would like to respond to that, if that's okay.
Okay, you bet. Ma'am, state your name and title.
My name is Pamela Wagoner, and I am a family law attorney, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota State Bar Association, which was involved as well with the custody dialogue, and I was as well. With regard to the representative's question about the parent who is uninvolved in the child's life, and then a child support action is initiated by the other parent, and then that parent steps forward. First of all, if the parents were unmarried and they signed a recognition of parentage, the mom retains the sole legal and sole physical custody of the child until that father parent comes in to request of the court custody and parenting time of the child. So in my practice, what I've seen is that many of the clients don't even realize that they don't have custody and parenting time that's enforceable until such time as they are contacted to pay child support, and then they come in and they say, well, now I want to have enforceable custody and parenting time as well, not just by leave of the other parent, but yes, I do want to be more involved with the children. I think in studies that have been done about child support too, is that when parents are paying child support, they have more of a connection with their children. And so that might develop as the child support comes. So someone who is paying child support might wish to then have a say in the child, in the child's rearing, and have a relationship that develops with that child. What these factors do is to provide the court a real model and very specific ways of looking at the issues of custody and parenting time. And as Ms. Hugdahl had said, is that you not only look at the willingness of the parents, but you're looking at the effect of the proposed relationships and arrangements on the child and the parent, on the child's life. With respect to Representative Winkler's concerns about what problems did this solve, what we really looked at and heard in the custody dialogue from all of the different stakeholders was that too often very general orders were being received by the court that did not allow parents to really determine what was it that led to this decision about custody and parenting time. This gives a framework that's much more detailed, and actually it doesn't look just at the status quo. The former factors, or what I hope will be the former factors that we've worked under since the 1980s, will now allow the courts to really look into the future of the child and really look at what is good for the child and as the child is progressing through that child's life with parents who are living separately.
Representative Schoenberg.
Mr. Chair, and so would we be able to solve some of these problems if we were to provide a reference sheet or information sheet with the birth certificate to every child to say, here is how, if you're not married, if you are, if you're in the midst of a divorce, whatever, here is the ramifications of not dealing with custody issues right off the get-go? Or, I mean, is there, it just seems to me that maybe that would be help simplify something if we put that information to the parent at the time of birth, or at least at the records office through the birth certificate, saying, you better get this squared away.
And Mr. Chair, ma'am? And members of the committee and representative, actually, there is, on the recognition of parentage, there is notice about what the recognition of parentage does and does not do. And very specifically, in a number of languages, it is stated that mom retains custody of the child, that if dad, it establishes the legal relationship of the parent-child relationship, it establishes that both parents are responsible for the support, the financial support of the child. And that if dad wants to go in to seek custody and parenting time, he must do so from a court order. So that is in the information in the notice that is attached to the recognition of parentage at this time.
Mrs. Huckdall, you had one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Sean, the other thing I just wanted to add was there is another bill from the dialogue process that actually makes that language much clearer and much stronger in the recognition of parentage, because there were several folks who believed that it wasn't as clear as it could be to let parents know that this could obligate them to pay child support by signing it, but it also, if they want enforceable custody and parenting time, they need to do an action. What we see sometimes, too, is parents who are together at the time they're signing the recognition, and so they don't think about that, and they may be together for a short or a long period of time or not together at all. But for those who are together at the time, too, they aren't thinking so much about going to the court to get an order because they're living as an intact family. It's for them a mechanism to get the name on the birth certificate. So I understand completely what you're saying, and we did talk quite a bit about how to best kind of address this without making something so prescriptive that we wound up causing problems in other cases. So that was kind of the balance we were trying to really look at.
Before we go to Representative Scott, remind me, we have a session at 12:15 and another bill, Representative Mahoney, and we've got Representative Hertaus, Winkler, and Ward to go at. Representative Scott.
I just wanted to bring Representative Schoen's attention to factor number 6, and that says the history and nature of each parent's participation in providing care for the child. So it's not like somebody can come out of the blue and just immediately ask for 50-50, and I don't know a judge on the planet probably that would allow that anyway, because it is judicial discretion. We wanted to provide for that as well. So I don't know if that helps you at all, but I think we've got you covered in many ways as far as you're concerned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Scott. And this is one of the bills I'm not trying to beat you up on. So
yeah.
I appreciate the effort you put into it. And that is just one of those issues. I don't know that it's going to be able to be perfectly answered. It doesn't necessarily make me more comfortable about that specific topic, but it's better. We're moving maybe in the right direction. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott, for your work in this area. I'm sorry it didn't pass in the last session. To my distinguished colleagues across the table here, Representative Winkler, Representative Schoen, I'm not a family law lawyer, and I've had the privilege of growing up in a nuclear family and basically in my extended family not in a circumstance of divorce or having to even have been involved in that. I trust maybe perhaps by some of your comments, Representative Winkler, that maybe you have had some experience in this and maybe not, as you're nodding no, but looking at the law and the way the conversation has been going, I'm, you know, a little concerned that, as mentioned, the courts have taken a narrow interpretation as the law exists now. And to Representative Schoen's concerns, I think that's a legitimate concern. But given the fact that we have 60% of all live births in Hennepin County and Ramsey County are to unwed women, and that we have fragmented families, I think what this bill is trying to do is for those parents who want to be involved and have a presumption of equal standing, and to, even though they're not married, create some sense of a nuclear family and parental involvement. I think those are the types of things that we should be rallying for. It doesn't require that an uninvolved parent must become a custodial parent if they don't want to be involved. But I think the greater good here is that for those active participants in parenthood who want to be a parent to their child, that they should be on somewhat of a equal presumption, because as pointed out in the testimony, our culture really has changed with regard to who's assuming parental rights, and it shouldn't be just a discussion about dissolution of marriage, but it should also be about the involvement of the biological parents. So I hope that this can move forward. Thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hertaus, I'm just struggling with the bill, not because I disagree with the intent. I just wonder how it'll functionally work in the judiciary. And I guess, I'm sorry, I don't remember the witness's last name.
Wagner.
Ms. Wagner, as I look at these factors, I wonder how, in your experience, how is a court going to have enough facts that are reliable to make all of these detailed findings? Because, you know, even just the idea of being able to ascertain reliably how much time one parent has actually spent with the other, with the child in the previous several years seems to be quite challenging, much less determining the child's spiritual needs and cultural needs and effect on the well-being of changes to homeschool and community. I mean, these are extremely goal and oriented and aspirational determinations. I mean, I can't do a lot of these things as a parent with my kids now. I don't know what, you know, these are much less a judge being able to see into this world. So I just wonder how the courts can kind of handle this kind of detailed and fairly prescriptive set of factors based on their ability to, you know, ascertain the facts and circumstances of family lives and the challenge with that anyway. I'm just concerned that we're not, that we're opening up a bunch of stuff here to solve relatively a problem that might be better attacked other ways.
Mr. Chair and members
of Ms. Wagner
and Representative Winkler, the court in the prior factors had to make the same kind of findings. The findings, what's most important about determining custody and parenting time is that each parent has the opportunity to present the facts, their proposed parenting schedules, what's going on in the child's life. They have the opportunity to present what is going on at school. They have the opportunity to bring forward to the court all of the information under here. And that will assist the court then in coming to a determination. You know, keep in mind, too, that the majority of people do settle their matters without a judge having to make these detailed findings. What this gives is clarity to what the court will be looking at, the kinds of information that each party needs to bring forward to the court. Whereas before, in the old factors, clients would often say to me, how do I determine the intimacy of the relationship? What do I say to the court? What do I bring forward? Well, now we can talk about you know, the history and the nature of the parents' involvement, not just intimacy of relationship, but how exactly, what have you done with your child in the last 2 years? How do you play with the child? How do you, where do you take the child? Does the child go out to eat with you? Have you potty trained your child? You know, all of these kinds of facts are what go into the mix of a court determination of parenting time and custody. And I think we have this, these factors, as they've been revised, give clients a much more, a much better understanding, much more lay-term person's understanding of what the court will be looking at. Spiritual upbringing, religious upbringing, cultural upbringing, that's all very important, whereas before we just looked at the religious creed and culture, most people didn't really understand what does creed mean. So now we're saying spiritual upbringing, you know, we're saying religious upbringing, culture, you know, the kind of background, so that we've tried to take words and make them clearer for people and thereby make them clearer for the court as well. And, you know, with all due respect, I think we were very good at succeeding at not just looking at parents' eyes, not just looking at any sort of presumptive parenting time schedule, but really looking what's good for this child and how can this child grow and develop in a very positive, emotional, developmental, appropriate way with the parental help.
Mr. Chair, just the final comment. I'm just skeptical that a judge is going to be able to do that in a court setting based on the factual findings and information that can be presented. I think it's aspirational.
go ahead, if you keep it as short as possible.
Very short. Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I hear what you're saying. I think one of the biggest struggles, and I think I mentioned this earlier, one of the things that we really thought was important about looking at the best interest factors was where courts really struggle is where parties come forward and they have very little information to give the court. And one of the major barriers to that is because they didn't really understand what the court was looking for. And so in really clarifying the factors, to Ms. Wagner's point, we're hoping the court will get much better information, especially from unrepresented parents, which are a huge proportion of the people coming into family court. So that was a major piece of this legislation that we looked at, was making this much, much clearer for parents and a much more specific, usable set of factors.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. Representative Scott, thank you for working on this. I know it's been quite a journey. And I have a little bit different perspective on the timeline than has been expressed already. I don't remember the bill from before. I wasn't on this committee, so I wasn't as connected to it. But my sense is that the commission that you've been working on has worked really hard to give the tools to the courts and to the families that they need, and for the judges to be able to discern with greater confidence that they're doing what's best for the child and the family. So I appreciate what you've been doing, and I presume that this extra year has matured the conversation, that it's just helped make it better. My limited time in the House, as I've watched some of these very complicated and emotional, especially the emotional issues, we do get better as we continue to talk and share perspectives, and it sounds like you've got many voices at the table to come together on a consensus, and I appreciate that very, very much. At some point, we need to say we need to do this. We need to move forward, so thank you very much.
Okay, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Scott, I never thought I would vote for a bill of yours that had anything to do with the best interest of the child changes. So you've come, and we have come a long way in this area. I adamantly opposed everything you put forward previously, and I think that the process that you participated in really did bring the stakeholders together. So my question for you is now that the stakeholders are together and you have a consensus proposal, are you committed to making certain that on the House floor we don't see all sorts of changes that aren't part of the consensus proposal?
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom.
That was a question.
Oh, Representative Scott, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, thank you for your support. Yes, we plan, I've made it abundantly clear with my caucus that we don't want any amendments on the House floor, and I believe that. Where's Representative Mulcahy? Is he in the room yet? The others on this commission have been tasked with the same for their own caucus. We've done a lot of work here to reach consensus. Please don't upset the apple cart by trying to make changes or add other bills as this, making this a vehicle bill for whatever cause they might have out there. So we're very committed to keeping this as is, unless there are technical changes or whatever. We've had to make a couple of technical changes working with DHS along the way, but no substantive changes. I mean, we will adamantly oppose those. So.
All right. Nothing else, Mr. Chair.
Hey, if there are no more questions, do you have any closing comments, Representative Scott? And then I'll offer the public. Well, why don't I see if there's any public testimony out there? Yes, ma'am, come ahead. And if you could keep it short as possible, give us your name and title, and go ahead.
Hello, my name is Marie Garza, G-A-R-Z-A. Wasn't expecting to comment on anything. I'm actually just a constituent of Representative Ward, and thought I'd come in and hang out with her today. But obviously, confronted with what you guys are discussing today, I want to thank Representative Winkler and Representative Schoen to really show some concern for this. You guys talk about, you make a lot of decisions for people like me. I was a single mother at the age of 16, unmarried, dealt with custody problems, parenting time, and a lot of people like me, the laws you make in decisions for, necessarily don't even know you guys are talking about us. So I'm just really concerned with the parenting time change. I've dealt with parenting time, and in a perfect world, wouldn't a judge make the best decision, most perfect decision for both parties? But unfortunately, you can pay thousands and thousands of dollars, go broke, and only be in front of the judge for 4 minutes. So I would just, I don't like what I'm hearing. This is my first time even hearing about it, actually. And I work with a lot of teen moms right now. I'm starting, I have a nonprofit. I deal with domestic violence, education, awareness. I started working with teen moms at local high school. I was a teen mother. I know there's a lot of resources and a lot of things that people don't necessarily know that we need, don't advocate for. So I would hate myself if I didn't take this chance to sit in front of you and say, I don't agree with this, and I hope Joanne Ward wouldn't vote for this, because this is something that right now my ears are on fire. I know there's always best intention, but where are your people that look like me that have dealt with this? Is there anybody in here that's dealt with parenting time, child custody? Anybody, teen mothers, single mothers? Please come forward. So am I the only one? This scares me, and this should scare a lot of people. So I just needed to say my piece. I'm going to look more into this, because this is the first time I'm hearing about it. And like I said, thank you, Representative Schoen and Winkler, for at least having a dialogue to say, I don't feel right with this language. When you talk about the parents that want to come in for just because you want to go after child support, that happens a lot. That happened in my case. And it's been many years since I went through that, but I'm now dealing with teen mothers who are so fearful that we already know that the courtroom is another tool to continue the further abuse of their victim. So I'm not happy with this. I just wanted to say my piece. Like I said, I didn't even know this was on the docket for today. I was just wanted to follow my representative to see what she does all day. So I look forward to seeing more what can be done, what we can fix, because I do believe that children deserve two parents, but sometimes it's not in the cards. Because I know I didn't grow up wishing, I can't wait to be a single mother of two. I can't wait to struggle for everything in my life. I can't wait to be broke all the time. I never wanted that for myself, and I don't want that for my children, but sometimes it's just the cards that were dealt. So thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, ma'am, for your testimony. Any questions? If not, Representative Scott, do you have any closing comments?
I'll just wrap it up and make it quick here. I appreciate this young lady coming forward, and I would just encourage her to read the bill in its entirety. And this is no sort of a presumption for 50-50 time. Nothing, I mean, that was a non-starter in our group. I would encourage her to sit down. I'd be glad to sit down with her, or any of the folks that have worked on this commission would be glad to sit down with her. And I believe Representative Ward has read through the bill and understands it, and I'm sure she'll be able to spend some time with it. But I hope that Representative Ward won't be put in a tough spot here with her constituent here who hasn't been a party to this 2.5-year process and has only heard bits and pieces of this, and I would encourage her to read the bill. And I would just ask for your support. And just one comment to Representative Winkler's concerns about the judges. And one thing with the family court process, too, is it's usually a fairly lengthy process. There are early neutral evaluators. There are custody evaluators, parenting time consultants. And all of those people will be feeding information. They spend more time with the families than the judge does, and they will be feeding all that information to the judge. So he will have more than just a few anecdotes on which to make his decision. So with that, I would just ask for your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, if there's no more questions, I will move House File 465 be recommended to pass and go to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Mahoney. Representative Representative Mahoney, is your bill controversial at all?
I never carry any controversial bills.
Well, welcome to the committee, Representative Mahoney. I'll move your bill, House File 464. You recommend it to pass and move to the General Register. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair, and you had a little history, and Mr. Chair and committee members, you had a little history of the process and the bills. I have been doing this. I've been involved in this particular issue of family law over a decade, and fortunately, my colleagues that have been involved in this dispute resolution gave me the simple bills, which I really appreciated. Didn't have to do best interest or child support or anything else. House File 464 does two things. In today's world, in a parenting order, they have something called the Appendix A, which is stapled to the back of a parenting order. And again, it's called Appendix A. And what that is it kind of outlines the access that the one of the parents has to financial, not so much financial, but school, medical, religious instructions or records. What this bill does is take Appendix A and move it into the actual language of the child, the parenting order. Because what does happen is that it is looked upon as the fine print, it is looked upon as an add-on, and doesn't really have any value. So schools, doctors, churches, whatever maybe a parent would want to know about their child, it is looked upon as just, oh, that's not really part of the order, so we don't have to do it. I've had personal experience with this as a single father. Fortunately, many years ago, having to explain to the doctor, to the school, to everybody else, that Appendix A actually does mean that I get to go to the parenting conferences, parent-teacher conferences. Does mean that if my daughter's getting a vaccination or has a medical issue, I do get to be informed. If I am an emergency contact, so I need to be contacted. I'm not even an emergency contact. I am one who has to be contacted. The Appendix A takes all that information, puts it into the order. Pretty simple. Doesn't raise the hackles of anybody that's read the bill or anything that I know of. The second part of the bill has created a few more questions, which is, in today's world, a few years back, we put a 10% interest value on any judgment. What has been found is, and that included family law issues, what has been found is that sometimes when someone gets in the arrears and there's a 10% interest, they never get it paid off. And what happens when they never get it paid off or see any progress to getting it paid off, they say, what's the point? I'm never going to get out from underneath this. I can't declare bankruptcy. I can't do any of this. I'm just going to quit. I'm going to move to Timbuktu and never be found again, and the paid spousal maintenance doesn't get paid. The court, the debt doesn't get paid. So what we're attempting here is we're moving this to I want to get this correct. In many cases, the court administrator annually calculates an interest rate that can be charged on a variety of things. We're taking the family law piece under $50,000 and putting that into that same language. So the 10% interest will now be, and in today's world right now, prime is about 2%. Most often, it's a couple points over prime. So in today's interest, if you had a judgment in family court, rather than 10%, you would get charged approximately 4% as interest on that debt. So so you actually have a sense of paying that debt down. And again, this has been looked at by any number of people, and I have a list of all the people who have participated, from judges and lawyers, family alternative dispute resolution people of all varieties, and this is reasonable. And so, members, that's what the bill does. I can stand for questions. I have Ms. Wagner here if there's any that might want to hear or ask. I think I covered it, and happy to listen.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, one of the reasons why the interest rate was higher is because all other areas, I think, were increased at the same time, if memory serves me correctly. Will you combat any amendments that try to change that interest rate everywhere else in statute, so you're just going to keep it narrowly focused to this area of the law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, and to the members of the committee, there were four House members on these in this particular dispute resolution. We have all committed to fighting tooth and nail to keep any amendment off this bill, any of these bills. And I think there's five or six bills, some combining, even to the point of destroying 2 years worth of work and pulling bills. It would be unfair and inappropriate to the amount of hours. If we were billed by these attorneys that showed up and sat through this, we as a state probably would not have done it. And everyone has agreed that amendments to these bills would be out of place. And I will fight tooth and nail to keep any amendment off. I know there's been talk around here, this is as a vehicle bill, and I'm not going to allow that in any way, shape, or form. And I would pull the, if it went on, I would ask for the bill to be returned to the author rather than do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so just one last question. So the interest that's charged, where did that money go? I see that there's no fiscal note, so it's not the court that's out. So where did that money that was collected go? Who got it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, that money went to the, I'm not sure whether it's the plaintiff or the defendant, but to one of the participants in the lawsuit. So,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the only reason why I'm asking is because if, for example, I had expenses and you were supposed to be paying me and I didn't get the money, I might have to put that on my credit card or whatever to pay the bill, and I might pay, you know, 4, 6, 8, 18%, depending on someone's credit. So was there any discussion about that loss of that income, or do you just believe that you'll be generating enough payments now that that won't matter?
Representative Ball.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, it was the latter. There was no discussion to any great degree about a credit card or that kind of piece, and we were more focused on getting people to actually pay and come to the table and fulfill their obligations.
Final question, Mr.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So will there be any way for me to track if that actually happens? So 2 years from now, I find out that it really didn't matter and it really is whoever was supposed to get the child support who ended up with the money. Is there any way for me to track whether this actually resulted in?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, there might be, but I will tell you family law records are almost impossible to track. Some people have tried to do that, and they have to actually go to courthouses and take the paper records and write down notes. So I think what you will get is the anecdotal evidence from family law lawyers and the Bar Association and the Matrimonial Lawyer Association rather than hard data from the courts. And we didn't ask for that particular record keeping because that would have put a cost to this, and we're trying to keep it down.
All right, thank you.
Representative Wong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do like this idea because I've had constituents. One example was he's got a full-time job in the HR department to care of paying the child support. There was they went on a health care program, went off, it went down. When they went back, the child went back on, it went back up. They never notified the HR department, and he didn't find out until he went out on short-term disability for a shoulder and had to go in, find out what he owed, and wrote a check. And then that's when he found out he was arrears, because they never notified HR to bump it back up. He wrote the check, submitted, gave it right there that day. It was like 3 days before the end of the month. They credited it to the next month, leaving him defaulting on previous month and making it look as if he hadn't paid that month. When there was an attempt to find out what the payment policies were, do you have to have it 10 days before the, because nobody told him, warned him that there might be some issue. He was told, well, you have to, all requests for any information like that are need to be submitted in writing, and we'll get back with you with what we think. The county attorney, when I talked to him, said, well, they ought to know because it's set up in the courts, and frankly, because of, and this is not just a single issue, because of issues like this, then they get hit with 10%, and they didn't know they were behind. Those kind of issues cause people to throw their hands up and step out, as was mentioned. So, frankly, this is a good step to fixing part of the everybody's against me, and it's unreasonable, to making it more reasonable. Now, this bill doesn't address all the other issues, but frankly, it is not just a deadbeat person that may have fallen into this category. It can be somebody that is very consistent. So I just want to say I support the intent of this bill, and will vote for it.
Representative Mahoney wanted to respond to that, and then Representative Hillstrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, again, the HR stuff and all the other pieces that Representative Kwan talked about, this bill doesn't deal with it. It has nothing to do with it. That's an HR problem. That's a court's problem that this bill's not addressing or dealing with. So it only deals with the interest rates and the Appendix A. So thank you for your support. I'll take it. The other piece, I'll let you deal with. I'm done with family law for as long as I can do it. I've been saying that for a long time, but I mean it this time. But as to Representative Hillstrom's question about family law and the 10%, on spousal maintenance and child support, that this change in interest rate does not apply to that. This would only in the case, and it came up, it was explained by one of the attorneys in the group, there was a split of a house. One of the parties appealed, and one of the parties obviously won, and then realized that they were being charged a 10% interest on a home that had a mortgage of 3.5% or 4%, and took 2 or 3 years, and that was a substantial amount of interest, whether it was interest payments, whether it was $10,000 or $20,000, I don't really know. This only deals with that kind of an issue. So we're not dealing with spousal maintenance. We're not dealing with child support. That would stay at the 10%.
Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was just going to be my clarification. It's only a judgment's over $50,000.
Correct. And that's online on page 5, line 1.
Okay. Any other questions from any other members? Representative Mahoney, I think that there's no questions, and you've got the votes, unless you've got some extra testimony. I see some stirring there. I'm ready to go.
I would ask for your support, Mr. Chair, and if I could ask, where did you send this bill to the floor?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, if there's no other questions, the chair will move House File, well, public testimony, was there any? The chair will move House File 464 to be recommended to pass and move to the general register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
And any questions? Representative Dean.
Chair Cornish, just want to take a moment and recognize we have a birthday today in the room. So, Laura, the researcher, it's her birthday today. So, if we can all wish her a happy birthday, they'd be
happy
fantastic.
Birthday, Laura. Okay, thank you, members. Meeting adjourned.